This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You know, in our editorial meeting this morning, we were thinking through this next segment. And to help us think about it, Anthony, you actually had a great story. So you want to tell listeners about it?
Yeah. So we were talking about athletic opportunities for women, for girls. And I offered this observation that when I was a kid, my older sisters essentially didn't have athletics in school. I think when they got into high school, they had an opportunity to play some field hockey, and that was pretty
and that
much
was it.
Flash forward a generation, my 14-year-old daughter, who is now a freshman in high school, she's been involved in organized sports pretty much every year as far back as I can remember, practically since she was born.
And pretty much any sport that she did, it
pretty
was
much
interested in.
Any sport she was interested in, any sport that the boys were doing, that she was doing.
Oh, wow. That, I mean, so I'd say that's the world that I grew up in as well, you know, kicking around a soccer ball in my case since I was about four. And that big change, that generational change you're describing, is due to one thing.
Due to one thing, Title IX.
Title IX. It's just one sentence, one game-changing sentence, a historic one, signed by Richard Nixon into law because it was tucked into the Educational Acts of 1972.
And this is how it reads. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subject to discrimination under any educational program or activity receiving federal financial assistance.
Okay, so that's a little legalese, but that's it. And while the language of Title IX doesn't use the word sports at all, the law has had perhaps its most enormous impact on athletics. So get this, Anthony, back in 1971, the year before Title IX passed, only 7.4% of high school athletes were female. By 2001, that number had jumped to 40.1%. So a big jump.
Big, big jump. But it also raises the question, today, is Title IX even necessary?
Well, tonight, Wellesley College hosts a special panel marking the 40th anniversary of Title IX. We're going to talk about that question. Is it even necessary? We're going to talk about that now because two of the panelists join us. First, Melissa Ludke. She's executive editor of the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. She's a member of the Wellesley Class of 1973, where she participated in the college's first intercollegiate crew competitions. Melissa Ludke, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure to have you. So in order to introduce our other guests, I'm going to do so with a little flashback.
When I remember my surprise when the ball was going past me, you know, and the way my heart sunk when I knew it was going in, and then all of a sudden it came flying back past me again. And it was just amazing. And right then I knew we were going to win. I didn't know how, obviously, but right then I knew.
Okay, so that is U.S. goalie Brianna Scurry remembering the 1999 Women's World Cup, which everyone remembers the United States won against China. And I guess you thought I was going to play that moment where Brandi Chastain scored the winning penalty kick. But it turns out the most important moment of that game came before, and it's what goalie Brianna Scurry was talking about. And that was when Christine Lilly stood at the goal line and headed out a ball out of the goal that would have scored for China, and China would have won. So had Christine Lilly not saved the game at that moment, the U.S. wouldn't have been, who knows, world champions in 1999. I'm getting all just breathless thinking about it again. Christine Lilly, welcome to Radio Boston. Can you tell how excited I am just reliving the moment?
Well, I got a little nervous hearing that clip, too. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it was a terrific moment in in all of athletic history, I have to say. And we'll talk about it in just a second, but it's a pleasure to have you. And let me give you your full introduction. Christine Lilly, of course, has played in 5 World Cups, 3 Olympics, winning 2 World Championships and 2 gold medals. She was a founding member of the WUSA. She played with the Boston Breakers, and she was a key member of the Next Generation League Women's Professional Soccer. She just retired at the end of 2010. Christine Lilly, a true legend in athletics. So let me start with you, Melissa Ludke, because your story takes us back to that fulcrum before and after Title IX. What was athletics, what was being on the crew team at Wellesley like in 1971?
Well, being on the crew team, we didn't have a crew team in 1971. What we had was the gift of a racing shell, that there was a very big day at Wellesley because we'd never had a racing shell before. We'd had these crew shells that were specifically designed for Wellesley women to row in. And I had been very content to just row in what were, I guess, bathtubs in some ways compared to the racing shells. Ones you could take the oars out of the oarlock and it still wouldn't capsize. So on a very memorable for me fall day in 1971, this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful racing boat arrived. And I was one of the ones selected to get in it that afternoon. And off we went out onto Lake Waban, four of us rowing and one coxswain, obviously. And, you know, it was quite an amazing experience to be in this different boat. It was rocky, but it was so exciting. There was something about the sense that this was a birth of something new. We didn't know at the time because we didn't have a team. We raced against each other in dorms and in classes, and that was it. So to make a long story short, that boat became our ticket to becoming the first intercollegiate rowing team at Wellesley. And today, that boat sits in the boathouse, and it's named the Spirit of 1973.
Oh, wow.
Because it really was that. It was the spirit of those times that was about what we did that day in taking it from a, you know, kind of college sport that had been done for years. My grandmother was crew on her 1907 team at Wellesley. But that was in the big, you know, the more tubby-looking boats. So on the very first day that we took out this boat to row, we, of course, thought, well, with any boat, you just take out the oars and you'll be fine. We capsized. So that was another real awakening and a lesson that we had reached a different time in our lives and a different place. And so that was an experience right at the cusp of when all of this was changing for me.
Well, I think that's one of the things that, you know, looking back on it now, it seems almost unbelievable because we're so habituated to female athletes at virtually every level that it's hard to believe that even things like equipment weren't you know, part of your world when you were in college, you know, being a student athlete. So how much difference did that make from, you know, the 1972 when the law was passed to the very next year? Was it like night and day?
No, it wasn't like night and day. We, you know, when you look at night and day would be between then and really now or even 10 years after that. We didn't work out in the winter. I mean, we weren't athletes in the sense that we were year-round committed to doing a sport at the level that it certainly looked at to be done by women athletes today at Wellesley and at many other places. We sort of rowed in the fall when the boat arrived, and then in the spring we kind of got back in the boat and thought we'd go out and race again. You know, so it was at a level where it was really just beginning. We were taking the baby steps to doing it. And what's so thrilling now is just to see the level to which athletics at Wellesley, but also across the board in terms of women athletics is.
Well, so Christine Lilly, you're kind of the poster child of the world for women after Title IX for female athletes. I mean, when you were growing up, did you even know that there was a thing called Title IX that was, I guess, at least legally making it easier for you and your female co-players to be out there on the field?
You know, I didn't, and I'm trying to, when she started bringing that question up, I was trying to remember the first time I heard about it, and I'm not even sure when that was. But yeah, I was born in 1971, so I was born the year before Title IX kind of went into sort of act, but passed. And then, you know, I grew up playing, I'm from Connecticut, grew up in a small town. I played sports my whole life. I grew up with an older brother and five boy cousins. So to me, it didn't really matter that I was a girl because they let me play. So I never really was faced with someone saying I couldn't do anything until one time I was playing with the boys from second grade to eighth grade, and I was on a trip up to Niagara Falls. I was probably in maybe fifth grade, and we got there, and we were getting ready to play, and they're like, you guys can't play. And they're like, why? He's like, because you have a girl on the team. So instead of my team staying there and playing without me, we all left.
Oh, solidarity, good.
And to be honest with you, my mom tells me the story. I was so young, you know, you don't remember those things. So that's really the only kind of moment where I believe there was someone saying that I couldn't do something. But in the process of understanding Title IX and then going on to college, I did get a scholarship, and I know there were three scholarships offered that year, 1989, when I was going to college. So that's even 17 years after.
Three scholarships for women soccer players?
Yes, and that's 17 years after it's supposed to have passed.
Wow, okay.
So then I started to realize things, that yes, we had this legislation that passed in 72, but we're still fighting the fight. And then I think just playing with the U.S. team for over 23 years, we just kind of became part of people before me. You know, what they've done, they just kept plowing the way, and we just kept plowing away and trying to make a difference on the field, but also making a difference off the field as well.
Well, listeners, so we're talking about 40 years of Title IX and whether or not the law that brought educational and athletic opportunities for two generations of women, I'll ask it, it's a little maybe controversial, but is it even necessary anymore? You hear Christine Lilly and Melissa Ludke probably saying, yes, it is. We'll talk a little bit more about why that might be. But questions for you, listeners. Do you remember high school or college athletics before Title IX? And how is life different for your daughter or your granddaughter because of it? How is life different maybe in regards to athletic opportunities for your son? And what impact can Title IX have on schools in the future, and what impact should it have? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So, Melissa Ludke, let me just turn that question right to you.
Sure.
Let hear what you have to say, because Anthony and I introduced some numbers at the top. We have 40% of high school athletes now being women, around that same number in college. There are many female athletic teams on just about every college campus in the country. So a lot of people look at Title IX and say, in a way, it's terrific that it's a victim of its own success. It's done its job. So why do we need it anymore?
Well, I guess I don't hear that many people suggesting that it ought to be just removed. I think what you hear is, you know, kind of the legalistic arguments, you know, about what it's doing perhaps to a particular men's team, which gets dropped, for example, if in fact the college or university decides that they need to drop that in order to be under the statute of Title IX in terms of what it calls for. Now, it gets very technical, and I don't know that we want to get into that in terms of what it calls for, but one of the ways is proportionality. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty easy concept. You know, you look at the number of females in your school, and you look at the number, you know, of athletes who are female, and you want that proportionality to be the same. If you have 100 female athletes and you have only 80 men, I mean, only 100 female students and 80 men students, then you're going to have more female athletes under the Title IX if you use the proportionality. Anyway, you get into a lot of that. But one of the things we're noticing at universities is that as the enrollment is going up. The women's enrollment in Division I schools today is 53%.
Yeah, they're more than half, but they're not more than half of the athletes.
They are only 46% of the athletes.
Now, is that because, I mean, Christine Lilly, do you think that's because of reduced athletic opportunity for women, or just that maybe there aren't as many women who at the collegiate level want to continue to play?
You know, that's the question out there. You know, it's hard to say, because if it was there, maybe they would go out for it, but it's not there. You really don't know. But I would strongly believe that if the opportunity is presented to girls, they'll take it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's been shown that they'll take it. I mean, there's just been such an appetite and such an increase that's come as the opportunities have been made available, as the facilities have been made available to women. I mean, that was one of the big questions early on, is where were they going to play? Where were their locker rooms going to be? All of this. And as that became something where the facilities came into place, the opportunities were there, the girls filled the spots. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has never seemed to be an issue. But what we've got into, I think, in the last 8 or 10 years, which is, I think, a little bit sad to see, is sort of the, again, sort of the legal hand coming into this and the kind of roster manipulations that are going on, you know, at various schools to try to stay within, you know, kind of the legal definition instead of what might be sort of the spirit of the law.
Meaning providing opportunity.
Providing opportunities. Instead, they're using sort of number crunching, where they are sometimes counting one woman athlete three times on three different teams.
To make it seem
to
get
the numbers up. They're also counting when men are involved in being on practice squads or practicing with the young women. They are called females in the, you know, in the roster thing. Yes, I mean, they probably wouldn't like that. I just went to the Hasty Pudding Show yesterday at Harvard, where men actually play women, but I don't think they'd like that.
Well, let me ask a question from the flip side of that, and that is something that you, Melissa, had mentioned earlier, and Christine, I want to get your mm-hmm. take on this, but, you know, this has entered the court several times, you know, schools, mm-hmm. you know, women saying we're not getting the equal opportunity, and schools saying we are giving you opportunity, and then also there have been, you know, several cases where men's teams and coaches of men's teams have said, we get cut. The entire team has been cut because the school, in attempt to have that proportionality, the only way they can see to do it is to reduce the number of men's teams. Right. I mean, for example, I read that the National Wrestling Coaches Association said more than 170 teams, wrestling teams across the country, have been cut as a result of that balancing act schools try to play post Title IX. I mean, is that not sort of an issue here?
But remember, at some schools, while those wrestling teams are being cut, there's a reason they're being cut, and that is that they may have increased their football squad. From, you know, again, the numbers on the football squads at the Division I schools went up from 90 to 111. So right there, you've got to then manipulate and find ways to do it. So it's a balancing act. There have certainly been young women, girls, you know, teams cut as well, and there have been lawsuits about those.
Well, let me get Christine's take on this. Christine, Lily, your thought about that?
Well, my initial thought is welcome to our life. But also, I don't want that to be the case. You know, the thing about sports, it should be there for kids. It doesn't matter if you're a boy or girl, you should be able to have the opportunity to play, or at least the chance to play. And I think there are three prongs to the whole Title IX legislation that I think people start to not focus on all three. And I think they blame just the women's sports instead of saying, well, you can restructure your athletic department a little bit better maybe, or find there's ways to make it work.
Well, we've got a lot of callers who have some stories to share with us and want to share their thoughts about Title IX. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We are talking about 40 years of Title IX. And I'm joined by Melissa Ludke. She is the executive editor at the Schuster Institute at Brandeis, and by Christine Lilly, soccer legend. That's all I'm going to call her. Glenn is calling from Richmond, Virginia. You're on the air, Glenn.
Hi. Hell yes, it makes a difference. I had the best reverse layup shot at W&L High School in Arlington, Virginia, and was never allowed to play. I'm 6'2" and was never allowed to play. My daughter went on to be the captain of her cross-country team and then went on to row for Brown University, all because of Title IX.
Glenn, what impact do you think being able to have continued access to sport had on the rest of your daughter's life?
Oh, enormous, because she had just been told by the Richmond Ballet that she really was no longer welcome to dance because she was too tall. So she had lost her confidence. And running in cross-country just completely reinforced her strengths.
Glenn, thank you so much for your call. I want to roll through a bunch of other listeners before we run out of time. So let's go to Brookline, where Sue is calling. You're on the air, Sue.
Hi. I just wanted to share a memory.
Sue, are you with us? Sue, if you hear me, are you still there? Okay, try and call us back. Amy is calling from Arlington. You're on the air, Amy.
Hi, this is so exciting. In 1971, I entered SUNY Binghamton in New York. Soccer was the game. Half of the athletic budget went to intramurals, and there were no women's soccer intramurals. And so I played with a bunch of guys before intramural season started, and when intramural season started, they said, well, you can't play. You're a girl. And so I went and spoke to the professor that was head of all intramurals. Said, oh, not a problem. Just show up at the committee meeting and present your case. And they were reluctant, but they let me play. And they said, well, you're the one girl that we're going to let play. This is, you know, a trial situation. And so I played. And the following year, they opened it up to girls, and I didn't realize until maybe 10 years ago that was the year that Title IX went through.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amy.
Yeah,
what was so...
No, go ahead.
But what was so phenomenal about doing this with soccer was at that time when I told people soccer, they looked at me and said, you mean kickball?
Amy, thank you so much for your call. I just want to get one more call in here if I could. Ellen is calling from Sudbury. You're on the air, Ellen.
Hi. I grew up during the era of Title IX myself, and in high school, the only sports available to me were cheerleading, which I was, gymnastics, and field hockey. And by the time I got to Mount Holyoke College in 1976, crew was also becoming popular on campus. It had only been around actually 1 year, and one semester even, and so I and signed up for the crew team, and although I didn't stick with it, one of my teammates did go on to become an Olympic gold medalist in crew. So that was very exciting. I was excited that women could actually do other sports besides
Ellen, thank you so much for your call. So a resounding group of yeses for Title IX from some of our listeners. Melissa Ludke.
Well, I found it fascinating, your question back to our first caller about what effect did this have on your daughter's life. And it's interesting because as I was doing some research getting ready for the panel tonight, I found a study. You know, sometimes these things are hard to quantify. We tell a lot of anecdotes. It's wonderful. An economist named Betsy Stevenson at Wharton, down at the University of Pennsylvania, actually quantified what the change in this female participation sport did. She found it had a direct effect on both women's educational as well as their employment achievement later in life when they became between the ages of 25 and 34. It explained in her study 20% of an increase in women's attainment of an educational level and 40% of a rise in their employment opportunities and wages.
Due to Title IX?
Absolutely. She looked at the high school participation of athletes before Title IX existed and after Title IX did. She did extremely careful work in separating out other factors. I can't tell you exactly how, but I've looked at the report enough to know that she did. But she found this direct effect of Title IX.
Well, that's interesting. In the last minute or so that we have, Christine Lilly, I want to turn to you because Title IX deals with all educational institutions that receive federal funding.
Right.
So we're talking elementary, middle, high school, college. What it doesn't talk about at all is professional athletics.
Right. Mm.
So I wonder, I mean, we just got about a minute or so to go. Even after two generations of Title IX and so many women on the field, in the pool, on the court, I mean, what do you make of the straits that women who want to go pro still find themselves in?
It's still ground we are breaking, and that's unfortunate. I mean, just on the soccer side, we had a professional league in 2001 and folded in 2003 due to budget reasons, but also I think just support. And then it restarted in 2010 and just suspended operations this year.
Do you think attitudes can be changed? I mean, will it take maybe another generation of having 40% plus of girls playing high school athletics to maybe make professionalizing sports for women a possibility?
I hope not that long, but I think it is changing, and I think it's also a business. And right now, if you're not making money, then corporations aren't going to help you. So you have to find a way to get corporations interested, get the base interest, and then start the process to grow, and then money can be made for a good investment decision.
Well, this is the beginning of the conversation. Wellesley College picks it up this evening in their panel discussion on 40 years of Title IX. Christine Lilly, three-time Olympian and international soccer star, former member of the Boston Breakers. What a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mingna.
I'm Melissa Ludke, executive editor of the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis and a member of the Wellesley Class of 73 Intercollegiate Crew Team. Thank you so much as well. Listeners, I'm sorry we couldn't get to all your stories. There are a lot of good ones, so do share them with everyone else at radioboston.org. And Elizabeth, by the way, on our website from East Boston says, how much does the higher number of male players at the college level have to do with the large football teams? There is no female sport with so many players. So a lot of gender differences to still explore again at radioboston.org. Up next, the winner of this month's round of zip code stories. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.